Pharmaceuticals versus Alfieri. Yes, Mr. Pollard.
Yes, sir, Your Honor. May it please the court. I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to be here this morning. Begin by addressing the issue of mootness, which appears to be a threshold issue and potentially one that could result in the dismissal of our appeal. There are three reasons why we contend that our appeal is not moot. The first
when
of the
preliminary injunction expires by its terms. And a fair amount of it has.
Yes,
not all. Not all of it.
Not all of it.
Then it seems to me that those portions that have expired, the terms that have expired, any appeal from that is moot.
So,
why am I wrong about that?
If I may, we agree that certain components of the injunction have not expired, namely...
No, I agree with that. Let's talk about the ones that have.
The ones that have.
Yeah, there's no effective relief we can give because we can't, if we were to vacate those portions, we'd be giving you the relief you already have because those portions have already expired. They're no longer binding your client to do anything. So it seems to me there's no effective relief to be given. Insofar as the injunction has expired, moot.
If I may, Your Honor, there is an argument that in the preliminary injunction context, with non-compete preliminary injunctions, there is almost uniquely this problem wherein folks are subject to preliminary injunctions. They are put out of work, put out of earning their livelihood. They pursue an appeal if they can either afford it or obtain pro bono counsel, mm-hmm. which I am, mm-hmm. and they never receive an ultimate ruling on the merits.
What would they get if they won?
What they would get does not necessarily go
vacature of that injunction, right?
They would, Your Honor.
Which that injunction has already expired. I don't understand what we would be giving them that would be meaningful relief.
It would be a pronouncement of the...
That's an advisory opinion.
Applicable law.
That's an advisory opinion, isn't it? Telling you what the law is without it being tied to meaningful relief is just an advisory opinion, which federal courts don't give.
But we submit that in this context... This same body of case law, which is riddled with conflicts, is simply going to be, once again, front and center only months from now.
Well, that may well be.
At the trial stage.
And a permanent injunction may well be something that is justiciable and that we can entertain. But the question is that in the interim, whether we can give any meaningful relief when the terms of the injunction have expired. I can't speak for everyone else, but there are terms that haven't expired.
Yes, sir.
And that I would agree with you, that they're not moot. I have different problems with those portions of the injunction. It seems to me that the entire cross appeal is moot. the portions of the appeal relating to the expired provisions is moot. And the remaining provisions that haven't expired, it seems to me, ought to be vacated because there's nothing in the record really to support those portions of the injunction.
If I may, mm-hmm. Thank you, Your Honor. In connection with that, I would only submit that the same test with respect to 542.335 and the existence of a legitimate business interest and in what context confidential information constitutes such an interest, or in what context customer relationships give rise to such an interest, it is going to be the same question and the same analytical framework that would apply with respect to a non-solicitation provision as would apply to an outright non-compete restriction.
Can I ask you, with respect to those unexpired portions of the injunction,
yes, Your Honor,
where you challenged them in your brief before this court? Not your supplemental briefing on mootness, but in your original brief.
I cannot point to anywhere in our original brief where we expressly called out and challenged the portions that were not expired. We may have articulated that a non-compete restriction and a non-solicitation restriction are subject to the same analytical framework.
Isn't that a problem, though, for our ability to consider those portions if you didn't ask us to vacate those?
We appealed the entire preliminary injunction.
Well, right, but our ordinary rule is that you need to raise all of the arguments that you have. So it would be harder for us to see a part of the injunction that you didn't challenge and decide for ourselves that that was problematic if you hadn't raised it with us.
I do not believe we expressly called out the unexpired sections so much as we challenged the entire scope of the preliminary injunction for the absence of a legitimate business.
Let me make sure if I understand it this way. So both parties, it seems to me, agreed that the formula were actually not at issue in the litigation. You have asked for a vacature of the preliminary injunction, right?
Yes, sir, Your Honor.
And if it's not moot because it's an unexpired term, and it relates to the formula, but the formula was not at issue, how could we do anything but vacate that portion of the injunction that depends on the concern about the formula?
We would not expect or ask for anything more than vacating it.
Well, what was your argument about that portion?
The portions that have expired?
Yeah. That had not expired.
Not expired. Our argument about the portions that have not expired is that the non-expired provision is a non-solicitation restriction, which is focused on VPX's customers. Mm-hmm. There is nothing in the court's order or in the record defining what those customers are, whether they're distributors, retailers, and consumers. There's no identification of specific customers.
Was there any pleading and proof about the identity of specific customers and relationships?
No, Your Honor. No, Your Honor, there was nothing there.
I mean, I thought what had happened here was there was a reliance on a statutory presumption of irreparable harm.
May I address that, Your Honor?
Yeah, but that was kind of the district court's rationale, right?
I would submit that to the extent there was a reliance on irreparable harm under PASALACQUA, in particular out of the 4th DCA, that presumption would be rebuttable, and VPX not being able to articulate.
Well, the problem is you first have to have violations of the terms before even those presumptions could come into play, right?
Yes, sir, Your Honor.
This is pretty frustrating appeal in many ways. But I have some questions about whether statutory presumptions under state law of irreparable harm can apply in a federal court where there's a preliminary injunction at issue. I'm not sure that that is something federal courts can do, But even if they could, it seems to me the problem here is there was no establishment of a breach of a non-compete covenant. There was no legitimate concern about customer relationships or formula, the things that motivated the district court to find a presumption of irreparable harm.
Yes, sir, Your Honor, we're in full agreement.
But did you raise that the district court had gone beyond the scope of the requested relief when it for paragraphs 5 and 6 of the injunction?
I do not believe we made the express argument that they went beyond the scope of the requested relief. No, Your Honor. I'm over time.
Okay.
Thank you.
We'll hear from your adversary. No, I'm sorry. I apologize. We'll hear from Mr. Gagne. Is that right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Yeah, you've got, okay, the cross. You're representing the cross appellee.
Yes, Your Honor. Patrick Gagne on behalf of Andrew LaRocca. I've also entered an appearance on behalf of Christopher Alfieri as well.
Do you agree with me that the cross appeal is entirely moot?
Yes, Your Honor. I agree with you, Your Honor, Judge Pryor. Absolutely.
Just me. I can only speak for myself.
Yeah, the passage of time has mooted this. And if you look at the timeline of events, October 12th of 2020 is when Mr. Alfieri, Mr. LaRocca, and on October 16th, 2020 is when Ms. Maros were all terminated from Elegance. If you look at the request for relief in the preliminary injunction, VPX specifically asked for these three individuals to not be working for a competitor, including Elegance, for the 1 year period that's specified in the covenants, so the restrictive covenants. So that was the requested release. It's docket entry 5. That's what they asked for here. And as it turns out, they've gotten exactly what they wish for. Even though they didn't prevail against Mr. LaRocca and Mr. Alfieri in the district court, they got more than their 1 year of non-competition because both of them did not compete even arguably after October 12th, 2020. And how do we know that? Well, if you look at the record in the district court, not only has discovery been occurring during this entire time, but February 16th, 2020, when they submitted the interrogatories, which were the subject of a motion to supplement the record, VPX already knew that Mr. LaRocca and Mr. Alfieri were no longer working for Elegance. And they haven't come back to the lower court and asked for another preliminary injunction since their termination from Elegance. So under any recitation of these facts, including the tolling provisions of the non-compete, and even if they were granted a preliminary injunction by the district court back on October 7th, 2020, the time's expired. And all these issues are now moot before your honors. Opposing counsel and VPX attempt to assert that they would be entitled to the benefit of their bargain of these contractual provisions and the non-solicitation agreements. And what they want the court to do is essentially overturn the district court, send it back to them, see if the district judge has found any subsequent violations of the non-compete provisions of their agreements, and then apparently enter an order which would provide a 1 year period thereafter from Mr. LaRocca and Mr. Alfieri of competing. But you know, although you know the court has its discretion and equity to enter an injunction, which would you know in effect be longer than the 1 year non-competition provision contained within the employment agreement, that's at the court's discretion. It's certainly not required. And under any set of circumstances, the 1 year period has already elapsed. And there's nothing that VPX can do to get anything more out of this court. They could claim that, you know, this is a matter that is, you know, escaping judicial review and it's capable of repetition, but they've still got their underlying claims, Your Honors. and they are proceeding towards trial on those. Just because the judicial process has taken longer doesn't mean that they didn't get their remedy. They've already gotten their best case scenario by having LaRocca and Alfieri not compete for an entire year. And again,
let me ask you this. Do you think that the original request from your opponents was limited to the non-compete in terms of employment issues, or do you think it also contained the broader relief that's outlined in paragraphs 5 and 6 of the injunction?
Well, I look at paragraphs 5 and 6 as essentially being dicta of the district court. The court seems to have been advising Mr. Alfieri and Mr. LaRocca that they can't be soliciting prior customers or current customers, and that they can't be competing. But nowhere in this order does the court say that they're enjoined from doing anything. And specifically, the court found that there was no confidential or proprietary or trade secret information that was taken by Mr. LaRocca or Mr. Alfieri and then subsequently used by Elegance or used during their employment. So as far as any legitimate business interest is concerned, Your Honor, I just don't see that any type of limitations that would be extra contractual or even, you know, consistent with the employment agreement were ordered by the court.
That's a good place for a follow-up. Under your understanding of the employment agreement, at any point in time, can any of your clients directly or indirectly induce or solicit or attempt to influence any current VPX energy drink customers or prospective customers about whom individual defendants had VPX's confidential and proprietary information to cease doing business with VPX?
If I understand your question,
it's, it's paragraph 5 of the injunction. And I have the same question for 6. My question really boils down to, are 5 and 6 restating requirements of the employment agreement that are perpetual, or are those different requirements that were created out of whole cloth by the district court?
Thank you, Judge Grant. That I understood better. I believe that what the court was doing is reiterating, the requirements of the non-compete and non-solicitation provision. And interestingly enough, VPX has not appealed the issue of the denial under the non-solicitation provisions. That pertains to Mr. Alfieri, who in the district court is alleged to have recruited employees and enticed them to come from VPX over to Elegance. That wasn't an issue for this appeal, and because they have never raised it. What I take the court's stance on paragraphs 5 and 6 in the district court's order is that it was merely cautionary, and it was to apprise the co-defendants, the individuals, that you are not to violate these provisions of your employment agreement. The court essentially recited those provisions. And I really look at it as cautionary. It's not injunctive relief. It's being granted. It's merely telling these people, look, you're not to do this, and you're not to do that, and you're not to solicit, not only employees, but you're not to solicit the customers of VPX.
Even if we were to vacate those two provisions, those limitations would still be on the parties because of the employment agreement. Right?
I believe so. I believe outside of the court's order that, yes, Your Honor, presuming you had a valid employment agreement, I believe...
Of course, that's assuming that those were even injunctive provisions.
I'm sorry?
That's assuming they were even injunctive provisions that expired, or as opposed to what you said, which is dicta.
Right. And that's the way I took them, Your Honor.
A restatement of the agreement.
But they would have expired as well, Judge Pryor. I agree with you wholeheartedly. I ask that this honorable court please affirm the district court's ruling with respect
to... Well, what we ought to do is dismiss the cross-appeal, right?
Yes, you ought to, actually, Your Honor. That is much more eloquently stated. Please dismiss the cross-appeal as far as the appellate mootness doctrine, and I appreciate Your Honor's time. Thank you.
Thank you. Before Ms. Pohl, you come to to the podium. Mr. Pollard, I just want to make sure I have one thing clear here, if you will approach the podium for just 1 second. And that is, you were asked some questions by Judge Grant about what you were actually arguing. And as I understood it, you wanted the preliminary injunction vacated. You argued that VPX had not demonstrated, had not proved a likelihood of success on the merits. The formula were not at issue and couldn't serve as a basis for the injunction, right? VPX otherwise failed to establish legitimate business interest in confidential information, and that the court erred in determining that VPX possessed a legitimate business interest in substantial confidential or customer relationships, right?
Yes, sir.
And insofar as the unexpired terms of the injunction are at issue, all of those arguments I just outlined that have come from the headings in your argument apply, right?
Yes, sir, because they are the predicate for the enforcement of the non-solicitation restriction.
Just wanted to make sure I understood it. Thank you.
Yes, sir, Your Honor. Thank you.
Ms. Pohl.
May it please the court, Beverly Pohl from Nelson Mullins for Vital Pharmaceuticals. I think we have to start with mootness anytime it's an issue in the case. It was confusing, I'll admit. But to go to the point where the court has suggested that the cross appeal is entirely moot, I understand that reasoning, and yet where an injunction was not entered and where the evidence presented at the time in fact supported an injunction, I feel like that unfairly deprives VPX of the remedy that it was entitled to. Well, and there are a number of state court cases saying that you do get an injunction if the appellate court finds that it should have been entered in the first place.
Well, if though the injunction that would have been entered in the first, if the terms of the contract, though, that would be enforced by an injunction, the period at which you would get injunctive relief has expired. At least we're in federal court. I don't see how we can do that.
I think the response to that has to be that it's up to the district court to decide what's taken place since the injunction hearing.
We can look at the...
Mr. Gunn, we can read
the contract, Ms. Pohl.
Pardon me?
We can read the contracts. We can read the agreements. And understand we have to determine our own subject matter jurisdiction, right? Mootness goes to Article 3, subject matter jurisdiction, right?
Yes.
And we can read the contracts to determine a question of law that would necessarily decide that mootness question, right?
That's correct. But what this court doesn't know, Mr. Gagne argued that certain things had occurred since the injunction order, but none of that's in the record. For all we know, Alfieri and LaRocca and maybe even Maros have been violating the agreement.
Well, it may be
subsequently.
You still have this action pending in the district court, right?
I'm sorry?
The action is still pending in the district court,
yes,
correct?
Yes, it is.
And there are potential grants of permanent injunctive relief, right?
Yes.
So really the only question is the it may well be that your client gets some relief in some respects. What we have here is far more limited. The question, and we have a preliminary injunction that has been appealed, that most of which has expired by its own terms, and then a cross appeal that, at best I can tell, could not be granted now, because all the requested relief would be for terms of contracts that have expired.
That's true, perhaps, since the record does reflect that, or at least I filed a motion to include it in the record, that they were terminated by Elegance, but mm-hmm. we don't know who else they worked for.
We'll grant that.
Pardon me?
I mean, I think we have to grant that because it goes to our jurisdiction, and there's no dispute among the parties about those facts, as I understand
it. I'd like to turn then to the merits of what's remaining with regard to Maros's appeal. And what's really remaining is the provision about confidential information. She argues that the VPX has no legitimate business interest in protecting its confidential information. But it's not just the formula. If you look at the
You agreed the formula wasn't at issue, right?
No, yes, the formula was not an issue.
So that can't serve as a basis for the injunction.
But the provisions in the non-compete agreement regarding confidential information are extensive. There's all kinds of information that is covered, and this court on review can look at the entire record and see if the record establishes a legitimate business interest.
Ms.
And
Pohl,
it does.
Let me ask a question, please. It seems to me that may well be true what you just said. That may well be true, but the district court relied on that formula, and therefore it seems to me we have to vacate the district court's ruling. Now, on remand, you're still in the district court. You can make these arguments about other confidential information, but you have conceded that the district court erred in relying on the formula, have you not?
It did. It's in the order, but this court can affirm for any reason that's supported by the record. And the record absolutely supports the idea that these individuals, when they worked for VPX, were among the core group of top employees. They had unfettered, complete, transparent access to the business operations, the plans,
Here's the problem
analytics.
I have. I don't see where there was any pleading and proof at the stage that we're reviewing.
Yes, there was.
Of the identity of specific customers and the substantiality of the relationship with those customers.
And that's not required under 542.335.
I'm quoting Florida statutes about that very point.
Well, if you look at the case law, and it's particularly we've responded to virtually every case in their brief, it is sufficient when you've got high-level employees like this because their knowledge and access to confidential information is unique among the body of case law dealing with these restrictive covenants. And I would just point to this court's decision in Proudfoot, where it was a high-level employee, a consultant who went from one firm to the other, excuse me, and he had some information tucked in his closet. He didn't even know he had it, and yet the injunction was upheld there. In every other case dealing with high-level employees, it's found that, excuse me. That a legitimate business interest exists in protecting that information, and that's what we have here.
Take a moment to get some water, Ms. Pohl. We'll give you an extra time to recover.
It's not COVID, by the way.
I got boosted 2 weeks ago, so I'm good.
Yeah. So really, at its simplest, I think this case is common sense, and you have to look at the context. You know, the Florida Supreme Court has said, with regard to the substantive law that applies here, the analysis of a non-competition contract is context-driven. And the context here is these executives who had, as I said, unfettered access to everything about the operations, plans, and analytics and financials of VPX going to a startup that was trying to compete.
DCA opinions, though, where preliminary injunctions were vacated because there's not enough record support for a substantial business relationship with specific customers?
The record support comes from the testimony of Mr. Eugene Bukavi, and there is it's throughout the record, but a nice quote at page 55 of our red brief collects much of what he said on this subject and illustrates that these people walked away with something very valuable to BPX, and they took it to a startup that was touting its flagship product, which was going to be a competitor. And remember, we're here talking about prevention of threatened harm. We don't have to show that they did disclose it, that Elegance did use it. All we have to show is a likelihood of harm. And this scenario fits that bill completely.
And the problem is, though, don't you have to establish who the specific customers are, the substantiality of the relationship, so that the injunction can be crafted to those relationships?
You know, I don't think the case law does require that, because we've talked about...
Statute does. The statute expressly says specific, does it not?
Well, but I think we've specifically characterized them. And if the court doesn't agree with me, then I would just say we only have to show one legitimate business interest to be able to be entitled to an injunction. And that I would focus on the confidential information rather than the business relationships and the customers.
Because it's really indisputable. There's confidential information besides the formula, right?
I'm sorry?
There's confidential information besides the formula, right?
Was what?
There is confidential information besides the formula, correct?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. A long list of things. I mean, I've recited it a few times.
Right. What worries me? I do see confidential information in addition to the formula, but the problem I have is that the district court relied on the formula.
And I would take the position that every appellee takes, which is that this court can look at the record and affirm on any basis it's supported by the record.
I was tempted to do that, and obviously whatever we think before argument is very tentative. But what worried me was the district court did not seem to be concerned about that other information, because he believed that CEO of Elegance no information got to Elegance.
And that was an error of law, Judge Anderson, because it's not necessary.
Well, but in a preliminary injunction situation, our review is it would have to be clearly erroneous, would it not?
No, I don't think so, because that's a question of law, whether that's required. And so on that aspect, your review is...
No, he's saying, as a matter of fact, no information was received by Elegance.
And even assuming that to be true, it's not a requirement to obtain a preliminary injunction that it be received.
That does seem possible to me, but I haven't read the entire record, but you don't argue that in your brief, and I don't believe you argued that in the district court.
But what we did argue is that the purpose of an injunction is to prevent that disclosure. So the fact that that disclosure hasn't happened yet isn't dispositive. So these people were at the highest level, and they took analogous high positions at a competitor. From a pure common sense point of view, and the law should have common sense, this reasonable restrictive covenant for a period of 1 year applies in this situation. And if that kind of confidential information is not protected, what is? These were, you know, VPX spent $250,000 to get certain financial analytic information that only it had access to. These individuals had access to it, and they took it with them. They should have all been enjoined. And the district court's order is internally inconsistent because it enjoined Marrows properly, but failed to enjoin the other two. And Alfieri actually was the one who brought them all together. So they all should have been enjoined. For that reason, we think the majority of the main appeal is moot, except for the provision having to do with confidential information. And the court could affirm on that basis. And as to the cross appeal, I hear the court thinking that it needs to be dismissed as moot. But I would point to those state law cases and say, we are entitled to get what we should have gotten at the outset, which is an injunction going forward from here.
Thank you, Ms. Bohm. Thank you. We understand your case. Mr. Pollard, you have 3 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. Very briefly, we agree that the Florida DCA case law forecloses any possibility that VPX could establish substantial protectable relationships here, because those relationships have to be identified so that courts can engage in an analysis of the substantiality pursuant to Evans versus Generic.
What about the confidential information?
With respect to confidential information,
which the district court didn't rely on.
Yes, sir, Your Honor. There are references in the transcript to other types of confidential information, such as market data, financials, analytics, etc. We submit that these references never went beyond a very high level of generality. There was no testimony.
Yeah, you've argued, for example, that like confidential information about the prices Vital pays to its suppliers is of no use to Elegance because Vital benefits from economies of scale that don't apply to smaller firms like
yours,
right?
Yes, sir, Your Honor. Elegance would be in no position to compete with VPX to obtain favored nations pricing because it's a tiny company. It also has different ingredients.
And if the district court didn't rely on this confidential information, given the contested nature of all of that, there's really nothing we could do to say there's irreparable harm and that would be an alternative basis for affirming.
Understood, Your Honor, and I can address it, but at that, I think you stated our position.
Is there anything more to be said than that?
Just one thing, which is that there is a case out of the Middle District called Lucky Cousins, and obviously it's merely a district court case, but we think that Lucky Cousins provides a good articulation of what litigants need to establish to prove a legitimate business interest in confidential information. And that is the information, it's not enough to say we have confidential information, we have proprietary methods, technologies, etc. They must actually articulate what the information is, that it is proprietary to them, not available to their competitors, and ultimately would allow for someone to engage in unfair competition.
Well, part of what they have to establish is irreparable harm.
Absolutely.
Right? You have to show that's going to be used by the competitor, right?
I would submit that in order
absent an injunction, it'll be used.
I would submit that in order to establish irreparable harm in this context, there would have needed to be some evidence that any confidential information at issue could be, at a minimum, could be utilized by the folks at Elegance to engage in unfair competition, because that is what it all comes back to under Passalacqua et al., unfair competition. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll be in recess until tomorrow.